When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albracht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is a Tuesday edition on the program. We are happy to be with you, Jacob Albracht, Tommy Kester, alongside you here. And we are ready to rock and roll. It's a playoff baseball game day, baby. And we are going to get you primed up for it. A part of that will be Kings of Kauffman Royals insider Mike Gillespie joining us in about a half hour to get you ready for the postseason. Everything we expect. Will we see Vinny Pasquantino? All kinds of good stuff. We may get some notes on that before the end of the show today. You'll hear that game at 2:30. Pregame coverage begins here on KFH. We've got Chiefs insider Dan Israel joining us at the top of the hour as we continue to wait and see on Rashee Rice. We'll have the latest there in just a few minutes, and then we'll get Dan's take on everything. Looking ahead, how do they react if he is out for some time? What does he think they'll do in the trade market? That'll all come at the top of the next hour for you. The IHOP hotline is open at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. Celebrate the weekdays with new IHOP house faves. All your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. You can also get in touch with the program via the Odyssey app. We know a lot of people listen to us that way. If you're listening to us presently or in the future, you can leave us a voice message. There's a little microphone on there. You just click it. Leave us a message, send it. Jad gets those. So that's open for you, as well as your video comments on 12 News Plus Connected and on Facebook, YouTube, and X. All kinds of different ways to get in touch with the program. We'll give away a little HTO later in the show as well. Tommy, it's a game day. We're all jacked up. It's been a while. Your Braves made it in. It is postseason baseball time, and that means something to us here in Royals Kingdom.
Yeah, do you mind if I break a little news here as we come off the top? So Jeff Passan is reporting that Vinny Pasquantino will return to the lineup today and will bat.
I knew it.
He will bat third in the wild card matchup versus Baltimore. He reported that 2 minutes ago. The Royals actually tweeted out a graphic of looks like Vinny Pasquantino's hands holding a bat. So
yeah, the Royals reporting it. The Royals are reporting that what we expected. Look, we told you we both thought this would happen yesterday, but it's the official word. Vinny is back. Where he is placed, we will keep an eye on it. I would imagine DH, which means Salvi will probably get the start at catcher. That's what I would do for now. But who knows? Maybe he's fine to play defensively too, but I wouldn't risk that. So that is fantastic news. Again, we'll get Mike Gillespie's take on that and just a pretty impressive rehab. But look, giggling Vinny in the celebration, I think, told us this. He was like, I can't say anything. I can't say. But, you know, what can you say without saying it out loud? This has been in the cards. And it does totally change things, Tommy. This went from one of the more, if not the most dynamic middle of the lineups in baseball that was as productive as any team in baseball through those three hitters, leading the Royals to having really one of the top offenses in baseball, to going totally anemic when he got hurt. So now you also add Tommy Pham's potential, his experience in the postseason at the top. Feeling good. I'm feeling good. Yeah. I mean, we don't know what Vinny's got. I mean, it's hard to say he's going to come back and be the guy that was going to hit well over 100 RBI and all those things. He's coming off of a broken thumb. You kind of need your thumb to swing a bat. But the fact that he's back is a good sign, and it makes this a completely different offense. And the other thing is, just psychologically, don't you think that's a jolt of energy for this team? It feels good right now.
Yeah, 100%. And the fact that they were able to, you know, sort of get their rotation set the way that they would want it to be set for the series in Baltimore, that's big as well. I've just been kind of looking over the Royals released their 26-man roster for this particular series and looking at who's on the roster, who's not. Of course, Vinny Pasquantino is on the roster. Alec Marsh is not. Carlos Hernandez is not. Robbie Grossman is not. So as far as position players, Pasquantino swapped in for Robbie Grossman, but Alec Marsh and Hernandez are the two pitchers that have, you know, had quite a bit of run with the Royals this year that are not on the wild card roster.
That's really interesting about, I think, for me, Marsh as much as anybody else. Give me the names again.
That didn't make it on?
That aren't there? Grossman, Marsh.
Grossman, Marsh, and Hernandez are the three highlights, yeah. The three main players that did not make it on the roster.
So what that tells us is they don't plan on going to Longman, and if they do, Daniel Lynch can be that guy. It's interesting. It's interesting. But the other thing we have to remember is, you know, Lorenzen might start a fourth game in a series, probably would, or he becomes a long reliever. I'll be curious to see how they kept Brady Singer too.
So this is just the wild card round roster. So, you know, they can reset, so this is going to be a best of three, right? And so you can really shrink your roster down, go with potentially fewer starting pitchers, obviously, because you're only going to need three. So, I mean, that makes sense, you know, as to why Alec Marsh is not on that roster. They're going to roll with the bullpen of Bubich, Ursig, Long, Lynch, Schreiber, and Zerpa. Those are the main relievers. Now, of course, Lorenzen and Singer, also Waka, are on the roster as well. Would be guys that, you know, potentially like a deciding game or whatever, that, you know, they could come in if the starter, you know, has some issues.
That's part of what I mean. Like what I don't know is, even in a long series, if you're gonna roll with Singer and Waka or Lorenzen, like one of those guys can be that emergency long. They don't, and it sucks for Alec Marsh because he's been a big part of what this team's done. They don't really need to put him on the roster. Like Well, even in the divisional round, I mean, I don't think that'll change much, because that's telling you now you're to your third long man at that point, and that would be a problem. I'd be curious to see who they would start in a game four situation. We surmised that Singer probably would get passed by Lorenzen.
But like, are you talking about in a division series? Like, if they got
in
to
a
that
long,
point?
In a, yeah, in a because longer
they,
I mean, series.
They, remember, they can reset the roster again for the next series.
I know, but what I'm saying is, I don't think they're going to reset the roster. I think they'll just keep it. I don't think Marsh is going to be on there either way, because what are you going to do with him? Right? Either Singer or Lorenzen is going to do what you would expect Marsh to do, and you have Lynch. Marsh probably just doesn't make the roster in any postseason series unless there's an injury. That's what I'm saying. And then and we won't know yet. Well, they'll have to, you know, you don't want to count your eggs, but if they get through this series, that game four situation will be really interesting to see the way the Royals went, because Lorenzen's in theory been better than Singer, but Lorenzen also has a lot of experience as a reliever if they needed him in that way. But, you know, hopefully we don't find out, because these starts are great from Reagans and Lugo and Waka. And as exciting as today is with the Vinny Pasquantino news, Tommy, let's not forget it's Corbin Burnes on the other side tonight. So, you know, it has the feel of something that should be very low scoring. The over-under on the game is 6.5. That's crazy. 6.5. Would you take the over on 6.5? Because I don't think I would.
I think it just depends upon how fired up, how jacked up the Royals offense is.
I mean, I wouldn't take the under either. But
yeah, I would stay away from that entirely.
Yeah, I would too. I'm just saying, like, all of this excitement and everything around Vinny, like, you're hoping in a best case, I think, if you're a Royals fan today, you're hoping you get, what, three runs in the first six innings of this game, and that you would feel, I mean, you'd be ecstatic about that. And at that point, you'll have to have, you know, Cole Reagans step in and also be an ace, which that's what he's here for. God, this is, I love this so much. I love this so much, Tommy. It has been too long for this. It was funny listening yesterday. I was putting sound together just, and I was like, okay, well, the obvious thing for me is you've got the young star in Bobby Witt Jr. getting his first chance at this. And then you've got the old guy, Salvador Perez, getting his first chance in what feels like a lifetime. First thing out of both of their mouths were exactly that. Bobby was like, oh, I've dreamed of this since I was a kid. And Salvador Perez opened with, man, I feel old. It's a really cool dynamic that they have. It's postseason baseball, everybody. Get ready, baby. Get ready. Here we go. 3 o'clock today. You'll hear it right here. We've got Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, coming on in about 18 minutes from now to help us break it down. Let's take a quick Royals break since we'll have that. We'll get you the latest on everything to do with Rashi Rice and the Chiefs. Now we have kind of conflicting reporting, maybe a little bit, maybe another, maybe another trade candidate that's out there. We'll talk about it. We'll get to some Chiefs news here, and then we'll have Dan Israel topping next hour as well. Give us a call. Royals fans, how you feeling this morning? 869-1240. We'll come right back. We'll talk a little Chiefs before we hit our Royals insider next. Mornings at KFH, we enjoy some Prairie Fire coffee. Appreciate Prairie Fire for keeping us fueled up here at the KFH studios, all across the Odyssey studios. All right, we're talking, it's just all kinds of a hype day. It's so exciting. We got playoff baseball back. You'll hear it here with us on KFH. We're excited. We're jacked up. Here we go. Corbin Burns. We'll get into all of it with Mike Gillespie in about 11 minutes. Tommy, before we do that, Monday Night Football last night, the two-game thing strikes again. It's unfortunate Dolphins-Titans was, you know, so injury-ridden because that would have normally been a good game. But it wasn't. But we still had the doubleheader. I am totally in on the doubleheader thing. I love it. In fact, I hope they do it forever and always. Seahawks-Lions was really, 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 really good, though. I joked with you last night. There are times often in this, I wish I was a Lions fan. I think the Lions are so cool and so fun. I think their players are cool. I think their coach is cool. I love their style of football, but they look good. Seattle, actually, and I know the score got away from them a bit at the end. I thought Seattle looked pretty good, too. I thought that on the road in that environment, I thought they held themselves well. I think they're probably for real, but that was a pretty entertaining game. But the Lions get the best of it. I think the thing that we all take away from it is what you texted me about this morning, and it's the question of, well, what about Tyreek Hill as a trade option for the Chiefs? And I think we all think about that. At the surface, I would wonder. I mean, Tua's coming back. I think Tua's coming back. So I don't know. I don't think Tyreek Hill's going to be available. But even if he was, the Chiefs didn't want to pay him the first time. I doubt they'd want to pay an older version of him. You know, like I don't think they'd go down that road.
Well, I don't think that they, I mean, he's under contract right now with the Dolphins, at least for this particular season. And I looked this up last night as there was some speculation flying around that, you know, potentially he could be on the trade market. The Dolphins converted all but $1.2 million of his 2024 salary into a signing bonus. And so All of that like goes away. The Chiefs would only be responsible for $1.2 million in salary, which is under the cap.
This year,
they'd have to restructure his contract for the 2 years after this season that he has remaining on his contract, 2025 and 2026. But going back to, I remember you mentioned this yesterday about needing some sort of long-term answer in case Rashi Rice is out for a long extended period of time. I would imagine And I know that Tyreek Hill wants to get paid. I get all of that. But I would imagine him with the prospect of coming back to Kansas City, reuniting with Patrick Mahomes, I think he'd be a little bit more willing now than he was, what, 3 years ago, as far as a contract and as far as money, you know, is concerned. It's kind of like that redemption story, a little bit kind of like what we've seen with Kareem Hunt coming back to the Chiefs. So is it likely? Probably not. But the Dolphins are not good. They did not look good last night. I would imagine that regardless if they ride with Tyler Huntley or Skylar Thompson in the absence of Tua, they're not going to be good offensively. Mike McDaniel said after the game last night that everything is on the table offensively. So, you know, I don't know what the prognosis is long-term for Tua. The Dolphins are very close to being irrelevant and being out of it in the AFC. So at that point, why not take a swing and see what you can get in return for Tyreek?
Well, I think from what I can see, Tua got a very positive report, it sounds like, from neurologists, and he could
great.
Be back as at
great,
the great. So if he's back, the Dolphins aren't punting on the season in week five.
Okay, still, like if you're the Dolphins, wouldn't you rather, at least in my opinion, wouldn't you rather try to, you know, stock up on potential draft picks or whatever that looks like in the future? And then, because you know that regardless if Tua has a good, you know, prognosis right now, this has happened multiple times. You need to start to have a game plan on what the Dolphins' future post-Tua starts to look like, I think. I think you need to have that contingency plan. The only way they can have that contingency plan is to start to maybe move some players out and, you know, start to acquire that draft capital in return.
I don't know. I think it's a question a lot of teams have. If you told me Tua is coming back in a week or two and I'm the Dolphins, then no, I'm not trading Tyreek Hill yet. I mean, he's far from needing to be. You're still going to be for 3 years. So no, I don't think I'd trade him if I was there. Because at that point, just trade Tua, right? And trade Jalen Waddle and trade everybody. At that point, blow it up.
I don't think anybody's going to trade for Tua. I mean, you know, as far as like a quarterback needy team, I think that it'd have to be some, you know, another team that.
Dolphins are inclined to blow this up. I don't think they're inclined to do that. I think if anything, they'd be more inclined if they decided to do something else to go find a different quarterback, right? In the offseason, go try to find a free agent, do that sort of thing. When you have Waddle and Tyreek and Achan, and they got a lot of good young players. And I know their quarterback is hurt and their backups have been able to handle it. And Skylar Thompson's better than the alternative, and he has been hurt a lot. But I would be stunned if the Dolphins are ready to do something like that now. I just don't think there's any way. Then it and if they did, would the Chiefs be interested?
I would also be
surprised by that.
I don't think it's likely.
The Chiefs could have kept Tyreek Hill without giving up draft capital, and they didn't do it. So I
for
also
a lot more money than probably what he's going to garner today at the age of 30.
But they still owe him the rest of the money, right?
Yeah, you'd have to restructure that contract to make it work for the Chiefs.
At some point, you've got to pay him. They have not shown us that they want to pay wide receivers that way.
I don't think that it's likely. I mean, I go back to what I said yesterday about the MO typically of Brett Veach and the way that he acquires players and what that looks like. So knowing all of that, yeah, no, it's not likely. It's kind of a pipe dream. It's a fun pipe dream to think about. It's more fun for me to speculate on that particular option than any of the other names that have been floated
out. I would call if I was Veach. I'd give him a call. Heck yeah. But the problem is, if we're looking at Veach's history, we know he's not afraid to trade a first-round pick. We know he's not afraid to invest high draft capital in a wide receiver either. He's drafted a receiver in the second and the first round the last 2 years. Sky Moore was a second, yes?
Yeah.
Was he a second?
Yeah.
So for 3 years now, they've invested first or second-round picks in wide receivers. We've also seen him trade first-round picks for Frank Clark and Orlando Brown. He's not afraid of either of those things. That's why I think a splash trade is on the table. But what he hasn't shown us is at any point, a desire to pay wide receivers. And so that's where it gets really interesting for me.
And there's going to be, I think, more time that passes before the Chiefs do anything. And even with the Dolphins. So you mentioned like not punting on the season in week five. I totally agree with that. They're not trading Tyreek Hill today or tomorrow. It would be something where, you know, Tua goes down in week two. They place him on IR. He's got to set out a minimum of 4 weeks. So once you get through week six, then at that point, I mean, you know, they're going to be without him for sure through week six. If the Dolphins are 1-5 at that point through week six, it might be a little bit of a different conversation for Mike McDaniel in Miami on what they want to do. Also, the Chiefs don't yet have clarity on exactly what's happening with Rashee Rice. So I can't imagine that they would jump on and do a huge splash move, regardless of who it is, right now until they know for sure exactly what they're facing.
That's correct. And we'll get into that, too. Just by the way, the Dolphins play the Patriots and the Colts in their next two games. With their issues on those two teams, those are still winnable for them, I think.
Dolphins looked really bad last night offensively.
I know. They may get Skylar Thompson back before they get Tua back, and they're much better with Thompson than they were last night. Real quick, on that Rashee Rice note, just because we want to put that out there. So what has happened with that is since we left the show, really this happened like late afternoon yesterday, we did not get the update from Andy Reid that he was done for the season. Okay, so that happened. And then we were like, okay, well, that's a little strange. He said they need more testing. And then the reporting later in the afternoon was that Rice is looking for a second opinion. That's a little bit confusing for a couple of reasons, so bear with me. A, it's a second opinion usually means you didn't like the first opinion, right? Which would probably tell me, like, is there any way we can make this thing work? Or it's maybe not as bad as they feared once they got in there and took those x-rays, and they're trying to see what their options are. So, I mean, it's missed time either way. How much? That'll get interesting. We'll get with that with Dan Israel. And don't forget, he's got a suspension looming, too. That's why these trades become, I think, more front of mind, is no matter what, Rice is going to miss significant time. But we'll get into all of that as we talk Chiefs with Dan Israel, our Chiefs insider. When we return, our Royals insider, Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, he's going to stop by. We will get you all primed up for postseason baseball. It starts today. That's next on Sports Daily.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on a Tuesday, on a Royals baseball playoff Tuesday. The Royals are in the playoffs. It's available for free right here on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune in to 97.5 FM, 1240 AM, KFH at 2:30 for pregame coverage. Royals at Orioles. You can simply download the Odyssey app and search for KFH at game time as well. We welcome in Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman, our Royals insider. Mike, it's been a long time, but it's here. The Royals are back in the postseason. They get the big news today with Vinny Pasquantino this morning. It's made official what we all sort of suspected for the last little while. I guess let's start there. What do we expect out of Vinny Pasquantino, and how much of a jolt is that for this Royals team?
Well, I think, you know, psychologically, it's got to be a big jolt. You know, he's been traveling with him and whatnot. He just started hitting it publicly, at least, out in the cage. And if he's ready to go, and you have to believe he is, he's too much a part of the Royals' future for them to just say, okay, we need a bat, we're going to take a risk with Vinny. I'm convinced he's ready to go. Now, does that translate into some home runs and RBIs? We're going to find out, and I think we'll get a really good look at him today. But it's a big deal. It really is.
It's interesting, Mike, because I had this thought, the other day before it was even, confirmed or I think it was being speculated that Pasquantino might be able to return to the roster and to the lineup for this potential wild card series. Obviously, now they're in it and he's been confirmed. But I had this thought at the time, even if they add him to the roster and they put him in the lineup and he just stands there and he's not 100%, I mean, even having the threat of him in the lineup should take some of that pressure off of Bobby Witt Jr. and Salvador Perez. So I feel like there's even a potential impact that Vinny can have, even if he's not hitting those home runs and driving in those runs like you mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's true. You know, Baltimore has Corbin Burnes going today, and you know, the guy's won 15 games this season. He's a proven winner, proven veteran. But I don't imagine when he learned this morning that Vinny was going to be back in the lineup that he probably greeted that with a big smile. Not unless he wants to challenge him, but it is really a significant development for this team.
Let's talk about the pitching, Mike. Corbin Burnes has been lights out in September. He has been a good postseason pitcher in totality. He wasn't very good last year in his postseason start. It hadn't been for the Orioles yet. What do you expect there? I guess you have to expect the good version of Corbin Burnes, and do you think at that point that Cole Reagans can match him today?
Well, that's a great question. Baltimore couldn't have a better guy starting the first game of this series. Which puts, I think, some additional pressure on Reagans. You know, Reagans is kind of deceptive. He's not all that overwhelming, but he just seems to get through the games fairly well. So I foresee a pretty, a classic pitcher's duel today. But, as soon as I say that, we'll probably see 20 runs.
It's funny, Mike, because I didn't realize this until just the other day. And Jacob and I discussed it on the show yesterday about how the Kansas City bullpen, which has been much maligned all season long, and we've had these conversations even with you about the bullpen and their struggles. In the last 2 weeks of the regular season, the Kansas City bullpen posted the second best ERA out of all bullpens in Major League Baseball. Clearly, while it was a struggle offensively for the Royals in the final 2 weeks and actually the final month of the season, it really seemed like that bullpen was the stabilizing factor and something that, they absolutely should, be looking to lean on as they get into the Baltimore series. Do you anticipate or imagine that they can continue this run that they've had over the last couple of weeks?
Well, if there's one thing besides this kind of dormant offense right now that bothers me, it's definitely the bullpen. They're pitching well at the right time. The timing couldn't be better. But they still, you look over your shoulder and you still see almost an entire season of trouble and inconsistency. We're going to find out. And it's kind of an all hands on deck type situation now. But if the bullpen can do what they've done lately, that takes a tremendous amount of pressure off the starters, especially when the Royals are going with a three-man rotation. And I think if they make it to the ALDS, I think you're going to see a similar situation. I don't think they'll stay in a five-man rotation. So bullpen's got to come through.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. The back end of the bullpen, I mean, the bullpen was – what do you make of the bullpen? Because it was really good at down the home stretch there. I believe second-best bullpen ERA in Major League Baseball. What do you think's closer to the truth as far as the bullpen? That they're that good or that they're the bullpen we've seen throughout the rest of the regular season?
As much as I hate to say it, I think the bullpen is probably what we've seen most of the season. And, the only change they've really made to the bullpen, besides putting Lorenzen and Singer out there for this series, is Hernandez didn't make the division or the wild card roster. Neither did Alec Marsh. I'm not too concerned about that, but I'm going to be surprised if they can sustain what they've done for the last few weeks through the next couple of weeks.
Taking a look back at the lineup, obviously having Vinny Pasquantino there in the middle of the lineup is a major impact for Kansas City throughout the entire playoff stretch. But some of the other additions that, the Royals have made, and we've talked about them at length over the last few weeks, whether we're talking about Tommy Pham or Yuli Gurriel, those guys in theory provide reinforcements in the lineup. For Kansas City, you add in Michael Massey, if he can get going like he did in the final game of the regular season against the Braves. Hunter Renfroe, if he can get going as well. There's still some pop in that lineup. And I guess specifically, if Vinny Pasquantino, assuming he is DHing it's kind of become a question, I think, that's been heavily debated entering this wild card series. Do you think it's a better position for the Royals to be in, assuming that Pasquantino DHs, to have Salvi catch and Yuli Gurriel play first, or have Salvi play first and Freddie Fermin catch?
Boy, that's a...
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
That's a great question. You know, I think it's better with Perez at first and Fermin behind the plate. Now, that said, Freddie's had some throwing issues the last week or so, which it really surprised a lot of people. I mean, that's usually one of his great strengths. But I, you know, maybe they'll prove me wrong. But I think you start Perez at first right now and Freddie behind the plate.
That's interesting. But where does it leave Vinny Pasquantino?
DHing.
DH.
But if, yeah, I think I would say just let Salvi catch, Vinny play DH, and
Gurriel.
I don't know. Gurriel.
Like,
yeah,
that's the big debate on what's going to be better.
Yeah.
Because like, I think we're all assuming, and we won't know until we get to that point, that Pasquantino's going to DH, you know, as opposed to playing first base, at least in this wild card series. I've gone back and forth on that. Like, is it better?
Because
Fermin has not hit very well recently.
I know, but doesn't Fermin's attitude and persona scream postseason baseball to you? Like, I know the hits haven't come, but like, his attitude feels right. It's almost like a Tommy Pham.
I think
thing.
The argument for Gurriel a little bit is that Gurriel's been there before. Gurriel's
right.
been in
yeah.
many
yeah.
different postseasons before, and can, you know, maybe help them attitude wise, you know, with his experience in the postseason. That's why I go back and forth on it. And you know, Mike, I think following up on what you said, it's interesting because Fermin has been pretty rock solid behind the plate until recently, where, you know, you mentioned he's had those throwing issues. But if you're talking about, you know, potentially the speed that Baltimore has, maybe that upside of having Fermin behind the plate to try to limit them on the base paths could be another benefit to having him catch and Salvi play first.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, Salvi's always been great at gunning runners down on the base paths, but I think at least this season, Freddie's kind of passed him in that regard. But, you know, who's going to catch and who's going to play first right now is probably the biggest and most interesting debate fans can have leading into this afternoon and even after this afternoon. It's a fun debate.
Let's talk about the top of the lineup, because we know what the middle has looked like this year with Vinny there. It's been as productive, if not the most productive, over that course. You were going to have three guys reach 100 RBIs, all those things. I want to talk about Tommy Pham, though, because they didn't have that when they had that middle of the lineup. They didn't have that experience. I think he could be a big factor here. He has had so many big moments in postseasons and all these things. As a table setter, if Vinny's all the way back, that's a different wrinkle for this offense. Because that was the problem most of the season. Who's going to be the leadoff hitter? They just were not productive there. Whereas now it feels like they can be.
Yeah, I agree. I think Pham, this is the kind of thing they got Pham for. You know, add a little fire, get to the playoffs, bat him leadoff. And if, you know, if he comes through, that's just a big, big thing for the Royals. If he doesn't, you know, you might see, as we go along, Garcia back at the top. But I think Pham's the guy right now.
Yeah, I wonder, Mike, too, you know, and Pham has provided a little bit of consistency at the top of the lineup as far as knowing who your leadoff batter is going to be. I was a little bit surprised, and I understand kind of the one-for-one swap of Pasquantino in and Robbie Grossman out. If it were me, the only change I would have made is I might have kept Robbie Grossman in and not had either Adam Frazier or Garrett Hampson on the wild card roster, just because I know those guys, I guess, defensively can bring something to the table, but they're basically, in my mind, kind of the same player, and neither one of them give you much, you know, at least offensively.
Definitely. You know, as I was kind of thinking through all this last night and trying to think of, you know, what are they going to do with this roster? It became really apparent to me that of those three, Grossman, Hampson, and Frazier, somebody had to go. And you know, you're right. Is there that much difference between those three? The difference is, as you mentioned, the defensive versatility. So I wasn't surprised to see Grossman go. But yeah, you're not, they're in there to move around the field. Yeah. They're not in there to get big hits.
I'm gonna give you one. Put on your predictive cap here, Mike. Will we see Lorenzen in this series?
In this one?
In this one.
Yeah. Only.
That wouldn't be good.
I foresee him in the first situation if they get in trouble early.
Right.
If Cole Reagans gets in trouble early today, you're going to see Michael Lorenzen. If Reagans gets him through the fifth, you know, then you're into the Daniel Lynch, Ursig, those guys. But I don't see Lorenzen, you know, coming in the eighth or ninth. He's going to be there if they get in trouble early.
That's trouble. I guess the reason I ask that is, do you want to see him? Like, do you like that he's there? Would you rather see him? Would you rather have a quick hook? I suppose is the point of that question. Do you think Quatraro should have a quick hook knowing that he's got Lorenzen there? But if he has a quick hook today, can he have Lorenzen tomorrow? I guess he'd have Lynch, but you know what I mean? Like, how quickly should Quatraro be ready to yank a starter in any of these three potential games if there's trouble in the first handful of innings?
Well, when you look at this Baltimore lineup, I mean, you've got Santander with 44 homers, Henderson with almost 40, Kowser with almost 25. He's got to be willing to make a quick hook. You know, if the Royals get behind 3-0, 4-0 in the first or second, this is a situation where he's got to go get the starter. He just can't say, okay, maybe they'll get straightened out. The offense isn't good enough right now to get behind by a lot of runs and then try to play catch up. So he's got to be willing to make a move early.
But if he does it today, I mean, are we good with Lynch? I suppose. I guess he can do it twice. I know Marsh didn't make it, but he's got really two options there. Without Marsh and Hernandez, those are two of your long guys. And they can, who cares? It's all on the table, right? It's postseason baseball. Mike, what do you guys have going at Kings of Kauffman to get us ready?
I'm sorry?
What do you guys have going at Kings of Kauffman right now to get us ready for the series?
right about about the postseason. That's
follow Mike on social media, all the work at Kings of Kauffman. We've waited a long time for this. They got here. Let's get it done. We're not that far away from playoff baseball back with the Royals. Mike, enjoy it. We'll hopefully be back here next week to talk about the next series of this thing.
Sounds good to me.
There goes Mike Gillespie. You can find it at Kings of Kauffman. This is one of the reasons I love baseball, Tommy, is because baseball is the longest, like, who cares about individual decisions kind of season until you get to this point, and then you haul out that microscope and we way hyperanalyze every decision made within a baseball game. At the end of the day, it's all about execution, right? Like, managers, poor managers this time of year just get killed. But the reality is, if a pitcher makes a pitch or doesn't make a pitch, like, you know, what are you going to do? Real quick breaking news before we break and get our Chiefs insider Dan Israel in next segment. You sent this to me. Pete Thamel reporting that Gonzaga is set to join the Pac-12 today, an announcement coming soon. It's pretty fascinating, actually, for me. I will say this for the Pac-12. They really missed the boat on salvaging football, they're doing a pretty good job of making themselves a really good basketball league.
I think that's, you know, absolutely the direction that they're going. And clearly they sold Gonzaga on this vision of being potentially a future powerhouse in college basketball. You know, remember, there had been multiple, I guess, reported conversations and discussions between the Big 12 and Gonzaga over the last probably, what, couple of years, you know, between Brett Yormark and the folks at Gonzaga about adding them. And for Gonzaga to decide that they wanted to go to the Pac-12 tells me, what I read into that is that the Pac-12 is, pardon the pun, punting on football, being a football conference that you can hang your hat on and wanting to compete in that world on the West Coast nationally with the other large four conferences. They've clearly sold Gonzaga on this vision of being a hoops powerhouse, and that must be the priority for them.
And it will be, joining San Diego State there, Utah State. They're going to be a really good basketball league. What's been really interesting about it to me is that the football-centric schools are choosing not to go. I mean, look, Colorado State and Fresno State are football schools, but like seeing UNLV stay is interesting. Seeing, according to reports, Memphis and Tulane rebuff them is interesting, because they're making football decisions. Boise's the one that surprised me, honestly. And they've got a pretty good basketball program. But Boise going, I thought, would be the catalyst to all the schools that cared about football going. Because if you took them all, right, you'd have a league that would surpass the American now at this point. I don't know that they're there yet. I think Memphis and Tulane probably tell. And the other thing about Memphis and Tulane is, that's probably more about, okay, great, can you go get a new football deal that beats the one we've got? What's the reality of that happening? Probably not very high. You know, I think the networks are in the business of shooting big with the bigger. I don't think there's an appetite. The basketball thing is a fact, and the reason I love it is because if you're a Big 12 fan, that's now two leagues that are telling you they think there's value in basketball in these TV deals, and I think that's good. I think that's good for the Big 12. Even though they didn't get Gonzaga, which would have been awesome, I don't mind that Gonzaga is going to the Pac-12. I don't mind there being another good basketball league like that. I think it's okay. And I don't want to see the Pac-12 die either. So if this is their lifeblood, then so be it. That's fine. But that news is out there. Pac-12 looks like it's going to gain Gonzaga, not the Big 12. I suspect that there wasn't a huge appetite for Gonzaga amongst the Big 12 member schools, and that's why that probably hasn't been done. Just like UConn, there wasn't much of an appetite there. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Dan Israel joins us. What does he think about this wide receiver situation? What does he know about Rashee Rice? We'll ask him both of those things. We'll look ahead to the game this weekend against the Saints. It's all coming for you. Hour number two of Sports Daily starts with a little Chiefs talk right after this.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.